You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at WeAreLibertarians.com.
Welcome to the Boss Hog of Liberty podcast. This is episode number 302 of East Central Illinois' favorite podcast. I'm Jeremiah Morrill. I am joined today by executive video producer, audio engineer today, but actually our co-host, Mr. Zach Burcham, trading roles because this is going to be the race night edition. Mr. Dakota Davis is in the building. He has a microphone, but he's going to be like Buster Bluth and seen but not heard as much as possible. And that's by his choice tonight.
It is. It's totally my choice. I said Zach could do my part of the intro because I want to see what it's like when I'm not here.
Told you, oh, wait a minute. You don't watch?
There's like no. A dozen episodes this year you could check out.
Returning race night guests. We'll go by seniority on the show. Mike McCown, this is what, the fifth year you've been doing this with us?
Fifth, sixth, I don't know. We've done it.
I don't know. Yeah.
I was the inaugural.
You're probably, hell, you're almost ready to achieve old timer status with us.
Yeah. What color hat are we going to wear?
God, we got to put a lot of thought into it. But when we get to the 30th year of doing this, we'll have to, is it 20, 25, 30 years? When do you become an old fire?
It's 20.
Only 12. Oh, 50. We got 15 years to decide what color hats we're going to wear. And then Blake McCown, this is your third year. Is that right?
Yeah. Third or fourth.
Third or fourth, somewhere in there. You chose to dress yourself today like a water tower.
I did.
That's very nice.
Yep.
It looks much cleaner and spiffier than the actual water tower.
Yeah, I decided.
I don't see any chips on it.
I noticed this week that water tower is looking pretty rough.
That needs to be touched up.
It's looking a little sad. Either that or
it's
somebody
not quite Penske perfect.
Somebody needs to write John Deere Green on it and just go all in. And then we've got Forrest Plank. Is it the third year you've done this show with us? All right. And I'm still enjoying the fact that you wore your AJ Foyt shirt today.
Yes. So last year I wore it out of desperation. This year there may actually be some hope.
It's real. It's real. Mm. All right, Zach, what do we have planned? Do your thing.
Oh, we're discussing the Indianapolis 500, of course, because it's race week. But first, of course, we have to thank all the people that keep the lights on, even though we turn most of them off before we start the show. But we've got some nice lighting here, and that's Christy Avery, who's our favorite Norwex consultant, Jonathan Phillips, who's the car sales guru and is running for, was it Ward 2 or 3? 2?
City Council, Ward 2.
Ward 2. And I should know that because I go to those meetings. And Anthony Meyer, who is literally just got, he's got a new gig he's going to start where he's driving across the country like every 2 weeks, like I think like Seattle.
He's going to have a FedEx route.
Yes.
And I looked it up because last week couldn't remember the name of the trucking company. A different breed. His trucking company is called a different breed.
It should be something about memes. But if you're interested in merchandise, then check out BossHogLiberty.com and send an email or a message. And we'll see what we've got going because Ms. Audrey Davis has got all kinds of ideas and things she can create upon request.
You may want to turn Zach up a little bit. He's in his mum. He's so reserved tonight.
Exhausted is what I am.
Yeah, there you go. This show is going to be a lot about our lives in rural Indiana. We're here to push your boundaries and make you think as individuals. Sometimes we'll provoke you. Other times we'll make you laugh. But hopefully you always learn something new. Also want to point out, we did get some a gift, Zach, on the Saturday night of the Friday night of the Grand Prix weekend. Pat Bremer, a viewer, Patton Speedway, as the internet knows him. He came by the campsite and he dropped off. It's on display, but I think it's actually out of the camera shot. A IMS Hall of Fame Museum plate, and it's an old school green with the wing and wheel logo.
Good one.
It's. I wish they still looked like this. I've got it on all my cars. The Borg Warner Trophy, the topper or whatever. No junk showing though. But it was off of his Corvair, I believe, is what it was. So it's got the last renewal sticker was 2004. So it's been kept tucked away for many, many years. But now it lives with us permanently at Boss Hog Studio.
I just lost my plate like that last year, year before, a couple years ago. Yeah, they cycled those out. That's my favorite plate.
It's like 7 years, and then they make you take the plate off of the oven now.
Yeah. And you're just waiting. It was like a guillotine waiting to drop when they're going to make you take off your cool IMS plate. Because the top of the Borg Warner is cool, but it's not recognizable. It's as recognizable as the wing and wheel is. The wing and wheel is a more universal symbol to me.
I think so. I've got two black vehicles and a white vehicle, and I think the black and white plate looks good on a black car or a white car.
I have both of those, and both of those have those plates. So.
Yeah. On a black one and then a white one?
Yep.
Yeah. Dakota, do you pay attention to the styling of your license plate compared to the vehicle? Is this something you consider in any way?
No.
I do, actually. Yeah, I've got a zoo plate on my Excursion because it's tan, and the zoo plate is like shades of khaki-ish colors.
I did
specifically pick that plate for that.
I have an environmental plate on my truck. I do have a personalized plate. It says Beezer Creek, but
I go in and try to get out of the license branch as quick as possible.
I don't go into license branch. I order all online. On the line.
Forrest, do you run fancy plates?
No, because the last two vehicles that I've purchased, plates came with it, and I said, the heck with it. It's staying.
Plates came with it?
Carvana, they take care of all that.
They include it?
Yeah. Well, you pay for it.
Yeah, but
they're not a Jimmy Johnson plate?
They just email it to you. No Jimmy Johnson plate. Mm.
Thank God. That'd be in the wall on I-70 real quick.
All right, so let's get into this. Has been license plate talk on Boss Hog after tip talk last week. It's great. Are you supposed to tip your BMV worker? Anybody? All right.
It's called taxes.
They're underpaid. I remember seeing in a, I work for the state, seeing in a job bank, and it was like, I think that, and this was like maybe 10 years ago, but they were making like $13 an hour, which is not enough for the crap that they're dealing with at the BMV. They were not making.
Well, they're always unhappy, so now we know
that's why.
And they're only there like 3 days a week.
And they have to work on Saturdays. All right. So we have the fastest field in the history of the Indianapolis 500. Over the weekend, I wrote 80,000 in the show notes. I heard another figure where somebody said 85,000 came through over the weekend. Blake, do you have an official number? Are you allowed to know an official number?
I have been told official numbers, but those official numbers fluctuate. But we did set records pretty much every day. So first day of qualifying, we set the record going back to 2011, whenever they started keeping track. We have broke every day records since, which is awesome.
It's felt markedly busy out there every day this month.
It's packed. I've been at gate two when gates open doing traffic control and scanning tickets.
Is the gate two is 16th Street?
Yes.
The south end? Yes. The main tunnel coming in?
Yep. Tunnel two.
All right. So, and we'll provide some introductions here for those that don't remember. So, Blake, you were with the track last year in a college intern role, and now you are in charge of the interns.
So, yeah.
What color shirt do you get to wear now?
I'm in blue.
You're in blue.
I'm in blue. I look like full-time, but it says college program on it, so people know I'm an intern. So, last year, I was a part of the college program event staff, which is essentially you're a yellow shirt and a black polo. This year, I was lucky enough to get bumped up to being an intern. So I'm the program's intern doing a lot of the nonprofit work, and then I oversee the college program as well.
Does it come with any whistles or tasers?
Golf cart.
Golf cart?
I have my own golf cart.
Don't have a golf cart.
The trophy.
You've just got Zach's attention.
He blew by me on the golf cart. Didn't offer me a ride.
I didn't see you. You also saw me at my lowest point of the month. So
well, you're heading from turn one down the front straight away.
I saw Blake within the first 30 seconds of me being on the ground.
Absolutely.
It's like Blake was tracking
that was
my car.
Day one, I walked through the plaza, and I was like, what the hell?
And yeah, there was Blake, and I haven't seen him since.
Yeah, no, I've not seen you. I saw Zach. What was that?
I saw you during the grid walk. I saw you like, when we walked in the track immediately into Pagoda Plaza.
Yeah, no, Blake. You saw me again because you're like, Speedway's turned into a job, hadn't it? I was like,
yeah, because he didn't look happy. I was like, yeah, you turned your hobby into a job, and now it's just a job.
Damned it, fool.
Yeah.
Mike, this is your 40? Did I hear you say this?
This is my 40th race.
How many races for the family?
173.
Blake, this is indentured servitude. I don't know if you know that. You're not allowed to have fun. You have to just go.
I know.
My uncle Jim Davidson started and he had 58 years. His brother John had more than 50 years. This is my 40th. Blake's second. And Addie won.
She was one and done and then moved as far away from the speedway as she possibly could.
She's now the earliest year. Ed Carpenter Racing, and she had Ed's pole in 2018 and Danica Patrick ruined her from the speedway. So,
so what was the first 500 for your family?
Oh, in the 40s. The 40s or 50s.
So my stepdad, he started going in 58 with his dad. And I don't know when his dad started.
Now, Jim
going.
Davidson missed a couple years because of service, because he was in the service, but every year other. And in 82, I think the statute of limitations is out, but I was 15 and I had a Courier Times pit badge of Ernie Klotz's. And that was my first race I photographed. I came back in 86 when Ray Hall won. I was there in 87 with Chrysler and photographed Carroll Shelby in the pace car that I now own. And then in 88, I started.
Did Carroll drive your pace car?
Carroll drove multiple pace cars that year.
So yeah. Potentially.
Yes.
We've got to look for some sort of a, it's a Seinfeld joke. Are you ready? We've got to look for a wooden pencil. To know for sure.
Mike's first race, I wasn't born yet.
Of course.
Me either. If it was 82, I was also not here.
Yeah, I wasn't here.
It's a hell of a race.
82.
Mears and Johncock.
I was photographing and there was a woman that was trying to make the race that did not qualify, named Desiree Wilson. And that's who I was with. And then I walked out on to qualifications. And I walked by a guy that was really cool because he was holding an umbrella and the umbrella said Canon cameras, which is intrigued me. And I took a picture of him and he went out and hit the wall and it was my first fatality. It was Gordon Smiley.
It was right at the beginning of the month, opening day. Yeah. Yeah. So, Forrest, your family got their tickets directly from Wilbur Shaw himself, I believe.
Pretty close. So I think our customer number is under 5,000. And so I've had the tickets for several years now. Never tried to upgrade. But I think this year may be the year that I...
You've been messaging me. Your seats are in stand E right now?
No, we're in A.
You're in stand A.
Yep. Love the seats right in the middle of those south nine pits. Great. But I want to go up top.
Yep. You want a little cover?
Yeah.
A little higher? I feel it. It's I've been having this battle with myself. I love being in turn three. Like I love the view watching the cars come down the backstretch. I don't think it can be beat. But at the same time, I also am on the grid at the start, you know, for the flyover and all that other stuff that's going on or race morning till they shuffle us out. And then I've got this mad dash to go from the start finish line all the way out to turn three. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's 2.5 miles of walking before I do anything that day between the going to the camper, get onto the grid, and then back out to my seats and back 2.5 miles on foot.
I know a guy with a golf cart.
Oh, listen,
I'm not offering.
If that guy is available on race morning,
he won't be available for anything.
Chris Spangle says, weirdest, most highly specific brag of all time. I got my tickets from Wilbur Shaw. That's right. Well, I don't see your commemorative Wilbur Shaw t-shirt.
I've outgrown it.
you were just in diapers.
It was a schmedium.
He was just a boy in diapers. Wilbur Shaw, of course, Dakota Davis. You know, he was from Shelbyville, Indiana.
Yeah, of course I knew that.
Of course you did. Yeah, Dakota's our expert over here. He's going to be Googling stuff for us as needed to look things up and be the star. All right, Zach, tell me about the qualifying weekend. How did it go? What do people need to know? And why was it exciting?
I have to remember. It's been...
We had like 175 attempts over the
weekend.
Yeah,
I think it was 84. It was a record for that. So that, like normally Saturday...
It was 84 just on Saturday.
84 Saturday. Yeah, just Saturday. And so normally there's a lot of downtime on Saturday. As a matter of fact, they'll even open the track up for practice if no cars are in line. And that never happened. And I don't even know if it was close to happening. Like they closed it a couple times for track inspection. But it was like going the whole time, which was... I've never seen anything like it. It was like I said, there's just never a break. Because they were trying to set, for people not familiar with the format, Everybody gets a run. They drew numbers the night before. And you wanted to be, if you're on the good end, you want to be in the top 12 because that means you had a shot for the pole the next day. You really want to be above 30 or above because there were 34 cars going for 33 spots. And they, so 31 through 34 had to try to qualify the next day to determine who was going home and to set the back, set the last row. So, a lot of people just got like RC Enerson. Everybody thought he was probably going to be on the bubble. He made one run and was done. He was, I think he probably spent the rest of his day somewhere in a polo shirt. He didn't have to worry about it too much, but, the Rahal Letterman cars, which seemed to be problematic for qualifications, were really having some problems. So they were kind of struggling, but for the most part, it wasn't too bad. It was cool. The weather was really cool. So like, normally they're really big on where the draw is and who gets early. Who, it didn't really matter. I think I heard Hinchcliffe say he thought that the track and ambient temp were like within 3 degrees the entire day. It just didn't change.
And absolutely no wind.
Well, Saturday was
Saturday was breezy if you were standing on in the row CC of one of the paddock penthouses.
That was a strange thing. If I were, I'm trying to remember, there was a tailwind going down the front or the back straightaway on Friday for Fast Friday, which is when they get increased boost. It was a tailwind going down the front straightaway on Saturday. So they were going into turn one, like the fast guys were going into turn one at like 242 miles an hour. I think the day before.
It was the back straight.
They were doing like, I think somebody hit like 244 almost.
Yeah, that was Pato hit.
Yeah. And so it switched up on them, but it wasn't, it was pretty, it was chipper. It was like 64 degrees at noon. So bizarre on Saturday. We were freezing up in the top upper deck there, but it was better than being 90 degrees.
So Saturday had a very solid turnout. It didn't feel crazy busy until later in the day. And I feel like Sunday's crowd also built. Sunday morning, it didn't feel, honestly, it felt pretty quiet. And then by the time we actually got to the qualifying segment, it was packed.
Everybody showed up at 2 o'clock.
Yeah. I went down to to walk through the garage, came back up to where my things were, and we had been, like, our little box had been infiltrated by other people because it was just that packed that people were just forcing their way in. So I had this 80-year-old man chain smoking Marlboros behind me in the stands. And I should have called Blake, honestly. I could have been like, hey, Blake, get your taser around. But he told me bitching about it was bullshit. And then he put his cigarette out in his nacho cheese sauce. So it was a great time.
Wasted the cheese sauce.
I got a picture of it. He left after that. After that segment. But
I miss all the good stuff.
You don't hang out with those peons. Although you had to have some effort to get up where we were. Although there's an elevator nearby, but we were up as high as you could get. I could see my camper from our seats, but yeah.
It's a lot of steps to get up there.
Yeah, like one of my kids hates it. Hates it going up there. But it's like, this is where we're going.
I got up in the spotter's tower outside turn one for
going up there is legit because
it was.
I've never been to the spotter stand, but if you go up to like the, I've been up to, usually I go up to the E-Pen house for lunch on Monday, but they didn't. They had the whole outside closed. There's like a catwalk where you're out and you're hanging off the back of the grandstands. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing. And I was like, oh, that makes me nervous.
That crow's nest is the best place on the track.
Yeah, it was wild. I saw, watch Ferrucci take his and Pato take his from up there.
So let's talk about the bottom four first here. So bump hour, I guess it was. There was 1 hour of time in the way it had shook out Saturday. One of the Rahal cars got herself in, Catherine Legg. So that left the three full-time Rahal cars and Stingray Rob to go for four cars for three spots. And they had essentially an hour to run as many times as they wanted to. You could keep improving your time, or if you were already in the field, you had to withdraw your time to get back in. So we get to the last half of that hour. And Jack Harvey is the car that's trying to bump his way back into the race.
Kudos to his team because that was brilliant to take the car back out for two laps at 175 mile an hour
to try to cool
the car down.
I thought when he went out that he was the sacrificial lamb of Rahal.
He is in a real awkward spot though.
Forrest was texting me very salty in the last 15 minutes. Yes. Very, very salty.
He is like for all the rumors going around, he's racing for his job because he's not had a good year. He's not.
It's a 1 year deal, right?
He's not really. It's his second.
He's in his final year.
It's his final year. Yeah. Most of the time, you assume they're 2 year deal.
It's not gone particularly well, and they moved him out of their highest profile car into their profile car.
Yeah. Another car. His performance this year, though, has not been out of step with the team. And I know that someone brought up on the notes, or was it Graham was quoted during the week as saying that if the team's equipment doesn't get better, he might look to take his services elsewhere. And I know some people don't like it. He bust tossed the team. But short of old Stingray Rob or being down in there and Catherine Legg getting out of the last row shootout was almost an all Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan. I said that morning.
A family fight.
I was like, this could be just the four of them just duking it out to see who's the last one standing. But Catherine got herself out of it, so she was safe. So it's kind of hard to argue with what Graham's saying. It's not like he said something and then the results weren't speaking for themselves. Like the team was struggling. They were almost the entire field was running like over 230, and they were struggling to get like high 229. They're really having a rough
time. Yeah, but do you really put that out in the media?
It's not hard to put out in the media when the team is doing terrible. Like it's really hard. I mean, I guess you could sugarcoat it, but it's the truth. They've been struggling
Did he ever have to fight for his job?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
He didn't race for it. He hasn't raced for his dad the whole time.
He went. When Newman Haas went away, Graham had to find his sponsorship and put something together and brought that to Chip Ganassi Racing. So he absolutely had to fight for his job, brought Service Central together, and they created teams for him.
And then he was without a job when he went to Briar Reinbold.
And then he was completely out of work. He did a race at Briar Reinbold. He did some races at Sarah Fisher Racing. And then there was a year where Ray Hall really didn't have a seat for him either, so he ran the Kim Kardashian car. At the 500, I think he ran top 10 in that in a part-time effort. So, yeah, Graham really has had some gaps or some lean years. In the last decade, it's been very solid in the 15 car, but I would say that the guy paid his dues. He won a race very early. He's driving a Newman Haas car at 18, 19 years old. But then after the reunification, it got real dry for him for a while.
I think functionally he's the marketing arm of that team. Because I think I've even seen, see anything that Bobby's doing, because I know those guys are a lot of times diversified in what they're doing. But like last I knew, but he hasn't posted about it as much, Graham was a franchise owner within the Service Central organization. Like he owned multiple locations of their businesses. They have a couple of different like subsets that are under that. And so, yeah, I think he's the marketing arm. So if I were him, I would be a little frustrated if you're running out hustling, getting all these sponsors, and then they're hiring all these engineers. And I think that they'd made a mistake that Schmidt-Peterson made a couple years ago. And Schmidt-Peterson was the year that Hinch didn't make the race. They hired a very good engineer out of WEC, or the sports
European
car series,
sports cars.
European sports cars, Lena Gade, who's was the head engineer for Audi, I believe. And they came to Indy and they didn't have anything for Indy because their head engineer had never engineered an oval before. So in the offseason, Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan hired an engineer from Formula One who's never engineered an oval before. And then they show up to Indy and they don't have anything. And you compare that with Foyt. Foyt's engineer is Michael Cannon, who engineered the last two pole cars for Scott Dixon at Chip Ganassi Racing. And that's how much people are like, well, how much does an engineer matter? An engineer matters that much. Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan has been relevant the last couple of years. Foyt has not been relevant at the Speedway for a while. Tony Kanaan did as well for him as anybody could. They hired one engineer, and they took a rookie into the Fast 12 with Benjamin Peterson on one run. He didn't have to go back out again. So that engineering, especially at the Speedway, is huge. And so I think that they just
screwed that up. Ask Fernando.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's also a paint booth problem there. Yeah. They had a car that wasn't ready because it was the wrong color. But, yeah, they didn't. That was just engineering.
They were an inch off in ride height.
Smart people in the right places, and you don't have those kind of problems.
Yeah, Michael Cannon. I mean, and if you're a patron, you've got the show notes, and there's some links there. But Michael Cannon,
he's a monster.
He was also the same guy that had Dale Coyne at the front of the field.
Yeah.
Sebastian Bourdais was on a essentially a pole run when he broke his pelvis and stuffed it into turn two.
He was like a mile and a half an hour faster than the field.
Than everybody.
That was insane. Yeah. I remember that.
And then they pulled a backup car out, and James Jakes had a car that was, you know, could run with the lead pack as a backup car.
It was James Davison.
James Davison.
James Jakes, dig it into
he was my last autograph to get that year.
Dig it into the archives for James Jakes.
James Jakes, the Acorn Stairlift.
Yeah, I remember that Schmidt one.
Peterson.
Remember that?
Man, I can tell you.
I saw Jay Howard yesterday.
Jay Howard's everywhere, man.
Howard is very active. He pulled up in his beautiful Mercedes. He was like, I'm just going to the museum. And I was like, well, you got to buy a ticket. And then, but I was like, oh, you're James. I was like, he was like, yeah, like, how you doing? Like,
he's building,
great to see you.
He's building his own like grassroots HMD Motorsports. Like he's a good driver development guy.
Yeah, I asked. Good. I was like, "You still like in a car at all?" He goes, "Eh, we'll see." But I was like,
"He came out of lights, didn't he?"
Yeah, he. This is like the third time we've talked about him on the show this month.
Yeah,
he was in that Sarah Fisher team as well. Struggled to finally get his first start, but he did get a few of them.
He was the one that sent Scott Dixon 100 feet in the air.
Inverted.
In the Mount Comfort RV Honda. True. It's true. He hit the Camping World car. Served him right. All right. So bottom four happens. Graham Rahal is sitting on the bubble. Jack Harvey makes about three attempts in the last 20 minutes on a car that was warm. They basically took a little bit more front wing out of it, put new sticker tires on, get him out on track. Gun goes off. He has two laps that aren't fast enough. Third lap at speed, all of a sudden he finds a mile an hour, runs his fourth lap, and it beats the boss man by about 8 inches on track.
I don't even think I saw a picture. I think that it was like 0.004 seconds. I think I saw a picture where they outlined it, and it was the difference between the front wing and the tip of the nose cone, which is like about that. It was so close. Over 10 miles.
So I will say that Zach's family put together a Indy 500 pool that weekend of who's going to be the pole sitter and who's going to get bumped. And I put a hurting on the family because I picked both exactly.
We had
right.
an office pool and I was the only one that took Pillow.
I took Pillow and Rahal.
After the first day, because he did on Saturday, after the first day, my bookie uncle and his wife were the only two that were out. Like none of their picks
they had
were
nobody
still,
in the top 12.
All their people were in the 13 to 30, so none of them were eligible for a pole or a thing. So, yeah,
so they hedged their bets on Penske and Andretti.
I don't know who they vote. Like, there was a lot of Sato and a lot of Ilott at the time, because Ilott at that point, I think they were.
I had a lot of confidence. I didn't that think Ilott was going to.
Because it was.
I saw Marshall posted that they were changing chassis.
It was like Friday night. They changed chassis on Friday night. Yeah. So, because evidently that, I mean, they spent a lot of time. Honing a car that was evidently a pile of garbage in April.
They put all their money in Cappuccino.
That car is gorgeous.
That's the most beautiful race car I've ever seen.
It's Augustine Cappuccino. Ruined his name for me.
Just
now.
Be quiet over there.
His car is basically a version of the Argentine national flag and national soccer jersey.
It's beautiful.
Powder blue and white.
Powder blue. It's gorgeous. Beautiful. That's a great looking car.
And he's a great dude.
In the pool that nobody cares about, Zach's uncle took Newgarden and Enerson, and his aunt took Carpenter and Ilott. So both of them.
Those aren't horrible. You know what, though?
Carpenter's a solid bet for a pole run.
Yeah, and Enerson was Super Bowl. A solid bet to like potentially be bumped potentially because he missed it 2 years ago, but he just put it in the field pretty solidly. So
I don't think they're giving RC Enerson enough credit.
No, he's a great driver. He's a very good driver, and the effort that they had 2 years ago with the chassis when it was Top Gun Racing were so ill-prepared compared to what they have here. They hired one of the guys that was a Foyt engineer years ago is looking over the RC, the Able Motorsports car, and he hasn't put a wheel wrong all month. And no, you don't expect him to win the race. No, he's probably going to finish 25th, but he qualified a solid 25th and earned his way into the race.
Absolutely.
So it's a spectacular story. And it's if you look at all of the cars that are at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway this month, there are 33 cars that come from top tier efforts. They're either, you know, Dryan Reinbold is where 30 years ago Team Menard was. It's a part-time effort that shows up just for the Indy 500 every year, but they have a really well-prepared race car. And they're solid. And you know their cars are going to be okay. And they were again this year. Everybody else runs a full series schedule. Or it's maybe an extra car. Or Able Motorsports has been an IndyCar team for a week. and they stuck the car in the show like that.
Absolutely.
And nothing good things to say there. So I picked the bumped car. I also last week on the show picked Alex Pillow for pole. So I said, I'm going to stick with this all the way through. Alex had, I think he was like seventh or eighth in the first 12, yeah, which carried him through to the fast six. He ran a 2:35 and change in the morning, with a little bit of a toe, trimmed it out, and he stuck it on pole with a 2:35 first lap.
2:35.6 first lap.
Insane. Fastest pole qualifying run in the history of the race.
And wasn't even close to the wall coming out of four.
It looked completely under control.
It was easy.
Yeah.
The fast 12 runs were, I think, I don't know if people would approach it. Rossi sat on top of that group in the morning for like hours.
Yeah.
We're just like, who would have thought this? Just sitting up there. And then he didn't get knocked off until the very end of the day when Felix Rosenquist, who I don't think anybody would have said, oh yeah, this guy's going to throw down. And he threw down four monster laps to bump him out. And it wasn't good for him. It got him into the fast six, but I don't think anybody saw Arrow McLaren being like the heavy hitters at any point, really. They knew they'd be competitive. I don't think anybody said, oh, they won't make the fast six, but Rossi spent the whole morning just sitting at the top
to go
the pylon.
1, 2, 4, 7 or whatever
qualifying
they were.
Standpoint, they were dominant.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And Rosenquist did his run in the middle of a bunch of people trying to make other runs that couldn't do anything, and he went out and just
threw one down.
It really the weather was interesting because you kind of saw the haves and the have-nots because there were almost no excuses, and so you think, well, maybe the track's going away, and then somebody would pop out on Saturday and throw big laps down, and you're like, well, nope, it's there. Just some people need to find it, some people don't. And that's a strange thing in Indy where some teams have it and other teams don't.
So Sunday night,
but the haves and have nots is like 4 mile an hour.
Yeah, it's an incredibly tight field. Everybody's had this chassis since 2012. There have been a couple of body updates throughout. Chevy and Honda, there is no bad engine. You've got the parts and pieces, and you are working absolutely just on the edges to try to find any gaps.
My other takeaway from first day was Rinus VK. They blow a hole in the header, catch the car on fire, thrash, put it back together. He gets back in that car with nothing. No, you know, is this car going to stay together? Is it not going to stay together?
Yep.
And just dominates.
The best car for the car, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He's second.
Yeah, he's the only one that got through the fast 12, and then stuck in the middle of the front row.
And somebody said that he might have a record now for like consecutive front row starts or something like
amongst
that.
Amongst the Dutch?
No, I think period. Like, because he's just always up there.
Yeah,
he comes off as the kind of guy that is, he thinks he's invincible, and so he'll go out there, and Sato seems to be the same way, although I don't know how Sato's like that at that age. It's like, it seems like every time Sato goes out, you're like, okay, on which lap is he going to drift it and brush the wall with his right rear tire? Takuma and then Sato, drive through it like it didn't happen.
I just look at Takuma Sato and go, this guy's going to be 67 years old, still driving Indy cars.
And winning.
And just absolutely an ace at the 500.
And he's going to go full sail into turn one. Doesn't matter who's in his way.
Yeah.
But I mean, like,
he's driven for literally every Honda team, which is also spectacular.
Like a couple times a year, like, oh, here's the video of him coming off two, drifting, just a little tap of the wall with the right rear, but he never lets up.
He missed two by like 3
inches. A lot of times he picks up speed those laps. Yeah. Like, you think, well, he'll lost a little bit there, and he doesn't.
He drifts into the wall in two because he goes into one on the outside of everyone.
Yeah. So, watching the chat here, Ron Milford says he remembers when there were more than 34, and that made it more exciting. It's true. I think this format really does, to be successful, it needs 35 to 37 cars to really make sense. And I wish they would get there, but until they get another engine manufacturer, this is probably what you're going to get.
But I think even with this format, had you not had all those Ray Hall cars for that last row, there would have been more activity in that hour.
Yeah, probably. But the problem is that when it's designed this way, you have to pull your time. Your car sits there until you're bumped out. So when there's 34 cars, one car is on the outside. The car on the outside was Harvey. He was the only one that was going to make any changes or do anything to his car, unless you want to be absolutely insane, like Joseph Newgarden was on Saturday. Pull your time from the field and then attempt to requalify. Otherwise, you're taking a qualified car out of the Indy 500, which, if you ask Paul Tracy, is a kind of a stupid thing to do.
You ask Paul Tracy anything.
You follow his Instagram. Totally different.
No.
Do you follow his Instagram?
No.
Do you have Instagram on your phone?
Yeah.
I do.
I'm not.
Pull up Paul Tracy's Instagram.
I am not putting anything that man says into my brain.
And then just, it's not, it's just.
The pictures are disturbing enough.
It's
not even.
I remember the rant he went on last year.
It's all very troubling. No, all right.
His personal license.
So 33 cars. We sent Graham Murray Hall home. That's the way Sunday ended. Zach, you went to the track on Monday. What happened?
Sitting there watching practice from pit lane, and all of a sudden you see there's cars in the wall, and it
first accident of the month.
Yeah, first accident of the month. It'd been this remarkable, and people would like were at this point whispering it like, "Oh, it's been a clean month."
The past two years have been that way.
You're waiting for it because usually somebody steps out.
Just talking about the no hitter.
Yeah, you're just like, because and in some ways you're kind of scared because a lot of times you'll get a guy like Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch had an accident in one of the practices. Yeah.
Mother and daughter, Blake. That's a mother and daughter. Oh, a match set.
Holy shit balls, Jack Harvey. That was gutsy. Like, what the?
But that's a Skyline three-way.
But so Catherine Leigh.
That's a double doggy.
So and I'm going to put together a couple different things.
She's my angel.
Wow.
Plastic, Blake. Not carbon fiber. Plastic. No.
Thanks, man.
Cheap injection molded plastic.
Yeah.
But.
And she says I'm not.
I'd heard an interview with R.C. Enerson. So Catherine Leigh had run into the back of Stephen Wilson. Stephen Wilson, she got out of the car fine. Stephen Wilson had to be backboarded out of the car. And some people were trying to kind of give her some flack. She immediately took responsibility for the accident. She apologized to the family, to the team, and everything. I did hear an interview with R.C. Enerson where he said the same thing almost happened to him. He almost put his car on the wall. Because when they're practicing like full field, which is what they do on Monday, it's an all skate and they're all out there and they are shuffling around, but they will slow down.
It's completely unpredictable.
And they will shuffle around to get into different positions to see how their cars are in the lead, third, fourth, whatever. They did that. And because Enerson said he got into third gear in a turn where he had been flying. Same thing happened to her.
She's in a six speed gearbox.
Yeah, six speed gearbox.
Where they don't get out of five.
They're should be just sitting on it, sitting on the throttle. She was too close to Stefan, didn't see him check up, hits him. He hits the wall almost head on. Like there wasn't a lot of damage behind the front bulkhead of that car.
I haven't heard the radio at all, but I do question. She is the part-time Ray Hall car. I wonder if she had a spotter in her ear saying, "Hey, backing up, backing up, backing up."
Yeah.
If no, she had any notice at all, stacking up.
Because she's a capable driver. Some people like to take a crack. She's only female, but she is a capable driver. She's been around since the champ car days.
And there is absolutely no conspiracy theory when you're at 225 miles.
Yeah. It can't be.
No, but that guy smoking behind me on Sunday, I guarantee you he blamed it.
Raise hail, praise Dale, baby.
Yeah. I mean, she's been around since the kart days. It's the first 500 in 10 years, but she's a hell of a race car driver. So they backboard Stephen Wilson out. We don't hear anything. Turns out that he has a compression fracture. He has a fracture in his spine. He can't race. That lit the IndyCar internet world on fire.
Speculation. Now all of a sudden we've got 30. We have an empty seat on Monday night going into the Indy 500.
Yeah. And so everybody's first guess was probably going to be Jarred Hildebrand for that seat.
I almost put money on
that. Because
Hildebrand was in town, had passed it. He made it very public that he had passed his medical earlier in the month.
Took a picture of his gear.
There were rumors that he was going to get in another car because maybe somebody else's check had cleared.
There were some,
he's the only one who wouldn't have had to take the rookie test, right?
Anybody would
have had to take the refresher.
He would have.
Yeah, because Marco has to take the refresher.
He made it seem like he was also in town with his gear for a reason. Like, yes, so there were.
Yeah, he's running Carb Night at Lucas Oil Raceway.
But he was it indicated that he was on the verge of having a deal like 2 weeks ago. And it just disappeared. So everybody kind of thought, he's driven for Dryden Raybould. He's been a Chevy guy the whole time.
Has an Indy 500 win.
Nearly has an Indy 500 win. Iconic. Yeah,
should have.
And handled it with all the grace and all the class that anybody who's been repeatedly asked about it every
day. He's one of my favorites to talk to.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
He talked to me about baseball when I was 11 for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, he's
just a great dude.
I would thought that that's probably who it was going to be.
Destroyed his MCL when he was practicing with the troops when he had the National Guard sponsorship.
Yeah. Just a cool guy. And then some people, then there's a lot of people in the 500 fans who like to cling to like 50 year ago rules. And they're like, well, Graham's the first alternate. Well, there's not a first alternate. And they're like, well, the car qualifies, not the driver. Nope, not, that's not really true either. The team's just going to do what they're going to do. But people will start mentioning, well, Graham, and I did not think that it was possible for Graham Rahal to get in this car because he's a Honda guy. He's been a Honda guy for as long as I can remember. I'm not sure who his Newman Haas engine provider was, but
that'd be Ford.
It was a single.
Toyota.
So,
I think it was a single Cosworth supplied back.
But in the modern era, he's been a Honda guy, and this car is a Chevy, and apparently they had a deal inked for him to drive the car before the night was out. Like, he didn't even have to lose sleep, and they announced this morning that he's going to drive that car.
And I think the takeaway that I got from listening to the press conference, Don Cusick, who is the he's kind of the financial backer that Steph Wilson connected with to come to the Speedway. They partnered with Ryan Reinbold and Dennis Reinbold. Listening to them talk and listening to Graham talk in this press conference this morning, it really was a quick decision of, hey, Chevy and Honda are both racers, and they want to see the best Indy 500 they could. They said, we're not going to have any objections. You guys do it. And there's a pretty real relationship between the Wilson family and the Rahal family, going back to, we talked about Graham driving for Newman Haas when he was in Champ Car, and he was teammates with Justin Wilson. And then when Justin lost his life in 2015, the Wilson Children's Fund had some massive fundraisers that were put together by Graham, who was trying to look after that family. So I think that dovetailed in a way that made a lot of sense for us.
And in the old days, that manufacturer battle would have never allowed that to happen. I mean, it didn't allow it with Tony Stewart when he wanted to come back and get in an AJ car. It never allowed that to happen. And for that to happen to me was a really, really great thing. And the other thing you have to look at this is poor Steph Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, Stefan Wilson has gone through hell in a handbasket at Indianapolis. You know,
he got removed from the race essentially for a seat for Fernando Alonso.
Correct. And he had all of his sponsorship in line and everything else. And Michael said, we're going to bring you back the next year. And he did, and made good on his word. But Steph has worked his butt off to put the money together to get in that car. And for him to not get to ride in it is tragic.
Yeah, well, we were talking earlier about Rahal going out and getting the sponsorships together for the ride. Steph Wilson has done that.
Right.
He's built the relationship. We talked about it. So last year, if you guys remember our episode last year, Steph was the car that was the gnarly jerky that we did on Patreon. And we talked to Steph and had a great time. And I talked to him on Friday of this week on Pit Road about the car, about the race, getting ready. Just one of the nicest guys in the IndyCar. Just an incredible human. And very easy to spot, by the way, because he's like 6'5".
He's the tallest person. I took a picture of him yesterday. I guess it would have been afternoon because there's nothing going on in the morning. Because he's the only guy that normally when you walk around the paddock, you see a group of people, you're like, oh, somebody signed autographs. You have to walk up and like hold your phone up and take a picture down to see who it is. You don't have to with Stefan Wilson because he's taller than everybody he's signing autographs for by a head. He's 6'4". His injury was kind of interesting. Like, I don't know what the nature was, because that car was literally built for his brother, because his brother had a compression fracture during a really innocuous looking. It wasn't even an accident. He went off at Mid-Ohio and ran up over a road where they have like alternate courses, kind of like we're at Newcastle Motorsports Park. If you ever look at it from above, there's all these different alternate routes. And he just ran up over the top of it, and just the bump from beneath broke his back, or gave him a compression fracture. So you heard that with Stefan, you're like, man, that family, just big guys in tiny cars. But yeah, apparently his is in a different part of his back. But they said, you know, he feels fine. There was the hospital had said that there's no serious issues, but he's not able to drive.
He did an Instagram video today. So hopefully he'll heal up, be back next year. And he may
be one of the most approachable guys in the paddock. And it's funny, the local tie, but every time he talks to me, he wants to talk about Jack's Donuts. I mean, he's just a great guy. Just a great guy.
He gave me a fillet at the Ferrari Challenge last year.
He does some driver coaching for rich people.
Yeah. It was great. Great steak.
All right. Let's talk. We got the field set. Let's talk about the traditions, what you guys do. 350,000 people. I think that the stat we saw today that jQuery was running around with was that one in every 1,000 people in America will be at the racetrack this weekend, right?
The entire metropolis of St. Louis is going in and out of the speedway in 6 hours.
What, Forrest, what's race day look like for the Plank family? What do you guys do? What's your, I assume you, do you do the same thing every year, or does it, is it always different? What's race day look like?
Since 2016, it's been the same thing every year. In line for the cannon to go off, go into the infield and then hang out.
So once you do that, you can never come back out. You can't hang out with the campers. No,
fire up the grill, walk around, see the sights. Mosey our way over to our seats before they close the gate at the south end of the pit, so that way we don't have to go all the way down to the north end of Tower Terrace to go under. And
what time do they close that gate? What's your goal?
I think it's around 11 o'clock when they close the gate.
I didn't know they even opened that gate.
Yes, so you can walk across the track there at the south end of the pits.
And I've never been there. Like, that's the, I don't go in early. My goal has been during the Florence Henderson years is to get there after Florence's performance. I wasn't a Florence Henderson fan. Don't care if she rests in peace. And so, yeah, I've never seen that. Like, it would be really interesting when you're like to walk. I thought about, man, need to find a way to like walk around and see what's going on in the track in the morning because I don't get to see that.
So when I'd go with my parents as a kid, it was always get there early. We never parked inside the track with my family. We always parked at Dollidge Crane on Polko Street, about a half mile south of the track, wander around outside, then make our way in. Then as I started getting older and going on my own, somebody with me didn't want to go to the track at the butt crack of dawn, so we had find a way to get there later, which at the time I had a motorcycle. So you have that motorcycle parking inside turn one. You just dodge in and out of traffic on 16th Street, and you roll in 10:30, 11 o'clock, and park
the
bike,
to do it.
Walk to your seat.
Yeah, that is cheating.
And then you're
That's
the first
awesome.
One out. Out of the infield after the race because they hold the traffic for an hour, and the first ones out of the infield are all the motorcycles
that are lined up.
16th Street is wide open, so it's kind of fantastic. But you miss all the pomp and circumstance of the pre-race festivities. But now we get in, get there early, walk around, take in the sights, then make our way up to the seats. But my race day tradition since 2016, and it will be as long as. As my daughter, still my little girl, is getting a picture of us walking together, holding hands, somewhere near a gasoline alley.
So your daughter is at West Point?
She is.
Is she going to be back this year for the race?
So West Point graduates on Saturday afternoon. The cadets are released within 2 hours following graduation, and she has a 7 o'clock flight out of Newark back to Indy Saturday night.
So she's going
to
make it.
So she will make it.
That is spectacular.
Yeah, she actually
Good
has. She let me know a special request that she has. For the year that she graduates, but not, I'll keep that one under wraps for now.
Is she coming in uniform?
No. She makes it as far off a post as she can in uniform, and then she's in civilian clothes because that's what she longs for, is to be in civilians.
There you go. All right, Mr. Blake, what's race? Now you've got a blue shirt on. What's race day going to look like this year?
So 3 a.m. is when I have to clock in. So... Yeah, most likely sleeping in the car in the admin lot.
So partying in the Coke lot until 1:30?
Yeah, you know. Well, see, it's a 3 a.m. shift to whenever I get sent home, which it says on my schedule, 6:30.
There's enough Red Bull and 5-hour energy to keep you through.
Yeah, see, I
Blake,
don't
how,
like
how,
that.
How much does the college program think, oh, my God, please don't have any rain to push this back 2 or 3 hours?
I mean,
look,
I don't
it's a
care.
Podcast, but look on his
I
face.
Love... I absolutely love it. Like, I'm there for it. Like, let's do it. But yeah, I'm 3 a.m. call time. My responsibilities on race day, I check in the nonprofit groups right there at the North 40. 4 a.m. check in for 700 plus nonprofit people coming to
concession
fundraise.
Concession workers?
I am not concessions. I am like the people scanning tickets at gates or ushers in grandstands. Yeah, so that's been my job.
So that's how the track staffs up, is that they find churches, they find band booster organizations.
What I brought to the table this year, it was actually an idea from old Mikey over there. There's a database on the IHSAA website of every single athletic department, and for 3 weeks straight, I sent an email to every athletic director. And that was, I got almost 100 people, like just myself, which is absolutely, like, it made me feel great, like helping out, absolutely. But
And basically that will benefit those organizations.
Yes, they get a per day, per person rate, and I mean they can come out. It's a 12-hour day, but you can get your fundraising done in one day. So, 4 a.m. check in, which is going to be interesting. Then we got to shuffle the numbers around, get everybody to post before bomb goes off.
So do those people all park in the North 40
yes.
as well?
Yep. So it's going to be a madhouse up there.
So they've got 2 hours to get to their post, shuttle on the trams or golf carts or whatever.
Yep.
To get everybody at their gate in
or
time.
Or grandstand.
Or grandstand or wherever
the
they're going to be.
Goes off. So it's...
And are you fitting them all in yellow shirts as well?
So they have black t-shirts that say IMS guest experience on the back of them. And then they get the beige hat, like every yellow shirt or college programmer wears. Wow. Yeah. So it's quite the project. My boss is amazing. She absolutely kills it every year. Well, this is her second year, but has absolutely killed it. So
will you get to watch the race or you'll be in the golf cart triaging?
That is, they said, park your golf cart an hour and a half before the race and stay. So I will be there for green flag. The spot where everybody goes is right south of the pagoda, right there by the grandstand on Gasoline Alley Suites.
Yep.
There's a little ADA station there, and that's really just where you'll see probably 100 blue shirts just standing there, pre-race ceremony, flyover. I most likely will be on the grid for a grid sweep, flyover, all that stuff, but I'll make it up there for green flag.
You'll be on the grid sweep to throw me out of there.
Yeah. So,
all right.
What is the flyover this year? I haven't seen.
I don't think it's been announced.
They haven't announced it yet.
Yeah. Today's announcement was that Kyle O'Ran is going to wave the green flag.
I haven't seen a pace car driver announce
that. Either. I think that's coming tomorrow.
A lot of people have been asking about the flyover. Problem is, they've had two really awesome ones.
JD Ellis said it's going to be
on the badge this year.
Flyer. Dakota, you're going to watch from the campground?
No.
Are you coming?
No.
He's going to wait for the replay.
Have you been to one?
Yeah, just wait.
No, he bought tickets 1 year.
I did buy tickets, yeah.
He decided he would rather do a poker run. Dakota has yet to attend.
On a golf cart.
There's not even a poker run this year. I'm still not going.
All right.
How are you friends with him? Like, I'm sorry.
He's just going to stay home and eat octopus chips.
He can do whatever he wants.
I know, but you got to do it once.
It's his day.
You just got to do it once.
One of these years, I'll get him. I've had this discussion for the last 2 years, and Zach and I think agree on it. The month of May, the beginning of the month is the best part of the month. There's this inverse relationship. As all of the idiots continue to show up throughout the month, the track experience gets worse.
Yeah.
See, that's kind of what as you guys have talked about it, that's what I've thought I would rather do sometime is go to practices or go to the Grand Prix or something.
Yeah. You need to come early and enjoy the track and be able to walk around and actually meet people.
But you need
stuff.
To feel what we all
feel. I have
feel.
Been to the track. But by the brickyard. So
yeah, that's not something. The same. But by the time you get to race weekend, carb day is half miserable and race weekend is a slow, like race, the Indy 500 is a human experience, but it's a slog.
I
dealing with all the people.
I literally, like I said, have a very different experience than Forrest. I walked directly to my seats and like 1 year, I think I was trying to find something for sale. And so I wandered into Pagoda Plaza after the race. I'd never done that before, but it's straight to my seats and straight back to the camper afterwards and even then is a struggle because where I get kicked out onto the street is north of where I'm going, and there's this huge straightaway, and I'm the salmon swimming against this.
You camp outside turn four, and your seats are in turn four.
But slightly south. So I'm slightly south of turn four. So, yeah, I have to make a decision when I get to an intersection, which way do I run and walk against the entire mass of humanity that all are all going a different way because they're all going to the Coke lot. I went to the practice yesterday. I took a half day. This is only like 2 hour practice. So I'm trying to bunker a little bit of time, but I was like soaking it up because it's kind of the diehard nerd people that show up on Monday. And I'm like, this is my last day of really enjoying like just walking around and not hearing somebody ask where Kyle Busch's car is or like Dale Jr.'s car or something. Cause that's literally the kind of people that will be at the track on Carp Day? Is this in the garages? This is corporate people that they own something. They've got decent money, and so they got given a pass.
I was doing crowd control for Catherine Legg when her car came back after the crash, and there were three photographers in Canon vests that go, where's Catherine's garage? Standing right next to it, buddy. They had never seen anything. And I was,
yeah, that's about accurate.
Yeah.
So,
So
Mike, tell us, you are the 40-year media veteran of the group. What does race day look for Mike McCown? Do you wake up with Blake at 1 in the morning and drive in?
No, I used to go in at midnight when I was parking inside before and then go take pictures of the crazy drunks on Georgetown. But I'll probably leave at 3 from here, get there at 4 and go to sleep in the Gladiator for an hour, get up 10 minutes before the bomb goes off. I am the first photographer at the North End, and there is a hole or a room underneath the grandstand that I pull my little red wagon full of all my equipment down there and my fire suit and everything. I usually just chill out. I go and I eat breakfast and wear shorts and a t-shirt and get ready. And then I have a photography meeting every race morning that they say you can't go out on track while the car is running, and a lot of really bright stuff that people don't think about. And then I go down, and usually an hour and a half prior, I suit up and tie the fire suit around my waist and do the grid walk and see who I see and do what I do.
You try to get some pictures with some celebrities and some people watching as that's going along.
Yeah. You know, I've done really well in that. I had one in Sports Illustrated of Russell Crowe 1 year walking down there, and met Muhammad Ali 1 year, which was my childhood idol. And, you know, George Bush 1 year. And, you know, I've done some pretty good stuff down there. So
2003. George Bush.
George Bush was a guest of Tom Kelly.
Yeah.
His Secret Service quickly cleared me out of the way when I rounded the corner in the garage area.
Yeah, you look
suspicious. I wanted to step in front of him and take a picture. That does not happen.
He could have been hurt. That was the first Indy 500 I attended in person.
Okay.
Was one George Bush attended. Okay. That's how I have that rapid recall.
Okay. Yeah, they all run together to me. I know 1 year they gave me the Yup guy from Storage Wars, and I was really upset because the Kardashians were there that year. So, but no, I get ready to go. Usually by the time it's back home again, Indiana, I'm down at my post, fire suited up, ready to sweat. Go through about 6 or 8 bottles of Gatorade before I go out, and usually lose 10 to 15 pounds during the race.
And you're just watching turn 4 to see what's coming off it.
I like to listen to my scanner. You know, if there's somebody crying that their car's not handling, they're wanting to come in, I've got a foot tap going, and I know how many taps before they get back around to me. And I'm waiting for something to happen. You know, I've had a lot of
because Graham Rahal's crashed off turn 4 many times.
Yes, not as many as Jimmy Kite and Scott Sharp, but yeah, we've had our Billy Boat. We've had a lot of that down there. So,
all right, my race day tradition keeps changing. What I've done as I've aged and gotten a little bit more gray hair and a little less hair on top has changed, because I was that infield crowd in turn three for a long time. And as they've shrank turn 3 and made the experience more and more painful, we've started to move out to the grandstands and started to camp with the Bertram contingent out in lot 6. Now this is the second year we've done the sponsorship, so we're on the grid. And it's all this walking, which is spectacular. But, you know, now we've got this. We drop our coolers off in the garage area, run out to the grid, enjoy that for as long as we can, go back to the garage, and then try to flag Blake down on the golf cart this year to run me back up to the North End.
So are they cold passes for race day?
Yes. So yeah.
That is the hands down best race day experience.
Yeah. So we can do.
No, it's not.
We can do
for the common
for
folk.
The non-media. we can get in the garage area on race day, and we're on the grid. So pit road and on the grid on race day. So I was down there last year with some members of Scott Dixon's crew that we had met through Zach and the fam. I was down there, looked at the, you know, I got to see I saw Marcus Ericsson race morning. I took a picture with Will Power's brother in Gasoline Alley. I mean, it was spectacular. So yeah, can't wait to do it again. Can't wait to give big Alex Pillow a big hug before the race.
And you know, the tradition, everybody has a different tradition, and that's what makes 16th and Georgetown what it is. You know, I was talking to Blake about it yesterday. You know, Art Pollard and all of those guys that have died in turn four, they still have family that come down there race morning, you know, and probably grandkids that didn't even know the grandfather that died on the front stretch, you know, but they still have them there. It's an amazing event with amazing family tradition, and everybody has a different one.
Yep. I love to take people who have never been.
Oh yeah.
That's been my highlight of my month so far is, hey, it's our first time. Where do we go? Hop on the golf cart.
How much time do you have?
Yeah. Yeah. No, and like where I've been taking them is the South Vista right there where the big gain bridge.
Yep.
I've been taking them right there at the short shoot, putting them right up against that fence and just watching their face.
I walked one of my kids down there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
that's like a lot of people don't know about that area.
First few races I attended, those were the seats that we had.
Yep.
So
I mean, it's just
94 when Stan Fox hit the wall.
95
Feet came out.
So I was sitting there and scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, no, I mean the first timers, like, I love it. Like, you have no idea what you're about to be in store for, and it's great.
All right, so let's talk predictions. What we think is going to happen. This is where we say, hey, who's got a chance to do something well? What teams are we worried about?
I'm defending my title over here.
In the notes, I noted that Penske is now the fourth-tier Chevrolet team. They are obviously behind Arrow McLaren. They're behind Foyt, and they're definitely behind Ed Carpenter Racing.
They're not on race day.
They're the fourth-tier Chevy team.
No way.
But at least it's not 95 for Penske.
Joseph Newgarden is wasting his career at Team Penske.
No way.
Oh, goodness.
I do think that come race day, the biggest struggle for Foyt is going to be pit stops. And you have to deal with, what is it, like eight to 10 of them or something like that. I think that's where they're really going to have to focus is that's where Penske could run them down. It's just on pit stops.
Blake, do you want to lead us in the odds here? What I sent over this morning? Yeah. Or if you've got later ones?
Yeah. Well, I'll just do what you sent. So, Pillow, Award, Dixon, Rossi, VK, Erickson, Rosenquist, Sato, Ferrucci, Newgarden, and McLaughlin are all the favorites. McLaughlin's...
Seems to get out of like ninth before you get to Ferrucci.
Yeah, Ferrucci's at plus 1,200.
Yeah.
So $1 on Ferrucci pays out $1 or 12 bucks.
Yeah. Yeah, so those are the favorites. Our backmarkers are Enerson, Legg, Canapino, Rob, Ilott, DeFrancesco, Harvey, Lundgaard, Peterson, and Marco.
Zach, can you believe that there are four drivers that have odds worse than Devlin DeFrancesco to win the Indy 500?
That was a painful sigh.
Zach has my greatest joy about Zach Burcham at the Indy 500 is that he truly despises people.
I mean, I do find people I just don't like. I'm not a Marcus Ericsson fan because every win that Marcus Ericsson had was somebody else's worst day. Like, he never had a day where he just beat everybody. He had a day where other people beat themselves, and then he wins. He inherited everything. He's like the greatest inheritor.
So you're telling me that Dan Weldon's second win doesn't count?
I don't say it doesn't count. He was a winner before.
But Dan Weldon should have won 2006.
Yeah. So
Marco Andretti should have won 2006.
No, Dan had by far the best car that year.
But Devlin's just there because his dad writes checks. Sometimes they're late, and they fly people in from Colorado to potentially fill seats. But like, I saw one of the funniest things I've ever seen was over the weekend. I saw Devlin walk up to a kid who was not, didn't even know Devlin was there, didn't know who Devlin was, and forced his Devlin DeFrancesco hat on this kid and signed it for him. And the kid at no point asked for it, didn't anything, but then was immediately overshadowed by the fact that after being bumped, Graham Rahal stopped to sign this kids' family stuff because they were decked out in Graham Rahal gear, by which point there was no Devlin DeFrancesco hat in sight, and they had forgotten about Devlin giving him the free hat because Graham had signed an autograph immediately after being bumped out of the race. So, yeah, Devlin's just like, yeah, I have a bunch of people I'm very apathetic about, but I will, if you want to get me fired up, I will go off about why I'm apathetic about them. And Devlin DeFrancesco is one of them. He's gone next year.
Now, Ryan had a race back. Are you okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, he's in a car with no logos on the side, which seems fitting. I mean, he's like, my memory of him is his last full-time year. He spun out by himself getting out of pit row at Iowa 2 days in a row, a doubleheader, and he did the same thing. But like, we were watching qualifications on Saturday, and Devlin was walking around pit lane like a guy who was enjoying his last day with the team before he had never got to come back again with a fire suit on. Like, he literally just wandered around with his fire suit around his waist for like 2 hours. Talking to whoever he could talk to.
They might have to keep Devlin because there's. When was the last time we had an Indy 500 mic without a Canadian? We've always had a Canadian of some sort.
Before Devlin, it was Hinch.
We had Hinch. We had
Moore. You had
the K line. We had Alex Tagliani. We've had Paul Tracy.
Villeneuve.
Jacques Villeneuve. We've had Canadians in this race like for 35 years straight. I don't know. We need a token Canadian.
What year? Because I don't recall the story because it was a recent story. Did Robert Wickens say he was shooting to come back to the 500
next year?
Yeah, that's
I would cry. That's
our miracle.
I would trade. If that man gets in an Indy car.
Yeah, anything like that's an upgrade. That's like going from like a Tercel to an S class Mercedes to go from Devlin DeFrancesco to Robert Wickens. Yeah, the human interest story alone is off the charts for Robert Wickens. You know. Partially paralyzed, or he's in a wheelchair.
But there's always been one of those guys, and it's usually in a lower level Andretti car.
But they're not going to hire him. They're not bringing him back because they got new ownership at Andretti, and they don't want those guys anymore.
Like the garden gnome, a little bitty guy.
Sounds like Devlin DeFrancesco. He's a two
for him.
I don't.
Who was
it? Looks like a mouse.
Oh, Zach Veach.
Veach
yep. was a good guy.
So,
and everybody
good
should,
guy.
Everybody should also
driver.
Be very thankful.
Oh.
Everybody should.
Wow.
Hey, you should be,
hey
you
Zach Veach
should,
he brought gives a Gainbridge. Fine. He gives a fine two-seater ride. I'll have
and
you
I know. Would. No, I won't.
You know what Penske and all those people should thank Zach Veach.
He brought Gainbridge.
He brought Gainbridge, which is everywhere.
Which is the reason why they will have no paying drivers at Andretti next year.
Yeah, they're not.
Gainbridge or the Group 1001 is going to pay for the second seat, and they're going to say, no thanks, Mr. DeFrancesco.
The CEO bought into the team.
Don't need your money anymore.
He bought into Andretti.
All right. So, Blake, you've got the odds. Tell me, you get first pick here. You can pick your favorite, and we can overlap here.
Okay.
But I need a favorite, and I need at least a dark horse, if not an underdog from you. So on the three pager that we have, you can't go Mike and be like, oh, my dark horse is Elio Castroneves. He's won four times. We can't do that. That would be unfair.
Yeah. I'll defend my title right here.
All right. So I need your favorite to win the race or your pick to win the race. And then give me your sleeper, your dark horse.
Like last year,
I'm going to write these down.
Yeah. So for my favorite, I'm going Scott Dixon. He's got that. It's hard to say Scott Dixon has sneaky speed, but like he's been there all month. Sato was taking the crown all month because of how quick he was. Pelot's on the pole. I think Scott Dixon is going to
also motivated from last year.
Yes, absolutely. If he doesn't speed down pit lane, I think he'll win it. Then my dark horse. I mean, anybody in the top 20 has a shot, I think. So, give me Kyle Kirkwood.
All right. That's a
Kirkwood.
Kirkwood. Emo Kirk has been put on the board here for Blake. Forrest, you got a favorite?
My heart says go for the Foyt car.
If you say Santino Ferrucci, I'm going to slap.
Because AJ only has so many races left in him.
You could put Santino as your dark horse.
You realize AJ has achieved Richard Petty status of being the team mascot. He's not calling the shots anymore, right?
That's okay.
Did you get to watch AJ race in person?
I did.
In the 500? So I watched him race at the first Brickyard.
So I got to see him in qualifying. It was 92 his last 500?
No, it was later than
no, that. No, it was 92, 93, went out one day of practice, and then retired.
Okay. So he didn't race in the 92 race. 93 yeah. was my first race that I went to. So I got to see him practice, qualify, but I never got to see him in the race.
Okay. So you're putting AJ Foyt down as your favorite?
Hell yeah.
Put him in the car. going to crack a chassis open.
So my heart would say Ferrucci, but if I'd have to go with the favorite, it'd have to be Palou.
All right. And you got to you
sweep in the month.
You want a dark horse?
So
Ferrucci.
I wouldn't count out any of the Penske cars, so let's go with Newgarden.
Did you see Scotty?
That's a limb.
We're gonna criticize you for taking a Penske as a dark
earlier
horse.
Earlier, when we were talking about it, we said if you weren't on that first sheet,
yeah,
you yeah. It's,
did
it's,
you see Scotty Mack's tweet today, clapping back to the vegans that think milk shouldn't be in victory lane? He said, "If I win, give me two glasses of milk."
I will say that Newgarden's car is the ugliest car in the race this year. Did you guys see the Brian Herta shell car that his son gave him today? It was his 1998 shell car that he won the Guinness Acre with. Ran for Ray Hall Letterman Racing.
I think it's sold at Mecum as well.
I think it was a different chassis. It was a different car, but same livery.
Yeah. Tell me you're making F1 money without telling me you're making yeah. F1 money.
Hey, Dad, here's a running original version of your car. Yeah, and he's been working on the deal for years. But he says, don't worry, Dad, I got a good deal on it.
For 100 days to Indy, his mattress is on the floor. That's the best. I like priorities,
show.
Man.
Great show. We didn't even talk about that. But it's been great.
But I Shell doesn't do a good livery now. That black and white and yellow from the 90s, throw that on a car, and it's right up there with their Pennzoil scheme that McLaughlin runs. But the current one, I just think, is a disaster of
livery. I don't actually dislike Penske's liveries have actually stepped up, because if you think about it, like 2 years ago, before they brought out the sweet PPG livery, every one of their cars,
they're all just black, white,
or just had Team Penske on it.
It was blue and white, and they just changed it for me. Like,
oh, come on, go back to the Marlboro days.
I can't get past the Marlboro days. That was the best marketing.
When they went
ever.
From the white and the red to it was almost a hot pink.
Well, now you get to see the Marlboro livery on a McLaren.
Yeah, Penske's very envious of how fast it goes too. All right, Zach, I need a favorite from you and a dark horse choice.
Man, I'm like real torn. Because I mean, Rossi and Kanaan is a favorite. I'm going to pick Kanaan. Last run, fast team, smart guy.
Wife's favorite.
Was knocking on the door. Last year, if that race was a couple laps longer, which is, of course, a what-if of what-ifs, whatever, he would have been winner over Marcus, because I think he just was being a team player.
That crowd will go absolutely nuts.
Did somebody posted, like who do you want to see? And I was like, Tony Kanaan with a walk-off win. There would be burning cars and stuff being torn off
mattresses.
The walls.
Zach's not a betting man, but he could get Tony Kanaan. If he truly thinks he's going to win the race, he can get him at 18-1 odds right now.
$10.
That's horrendous.
18-1.
He's being disrespected like that.
18-1, Zach.
In a McLaren.
That made the fast 12.
A good-looking McLaren. Those cars are gorgeous.
I mean, I would... Under the rules of the agreement here, you could have chosen Kanaan as your dark horse, and you chose him as your favorite. Who's your dark horse?
Man, that is rough. Because I'm trying to think. Because honestly, one thing that's a little bit interesting to think about is that according to the Rail Letterman Lanigan guys, their race cars are good.
Compared to what?
Their qualifying cars are terrible.
Tractors driving across the street.
Some of them.
So pick yourself Catherine
my golf cart. Sorry, I can't be saying that.
Pick yourself some Catherine Leg.
Somebody who can actually win is... So how far back...
Dude, we've had 2 days to
come on,
figure
Jack,
out.
I haven't thought about it. I have a job.
On Sunday.
Anybody on this list you can choose from. While you're looking, we'll go to Mike. Mike, who is your favorite going to be for the race?
I truly think it's Alexander Rossi's year. He's just been smooth all month until the look at the 230 or two. The fast lap. Until then, he really hadn't shown much. I just think he's trying to get out from underneath the Andretti curse.
Who won the Indy 500 31 years ago as a strategist?
31 years.
What year was that?
1992.
That was Little Al.
As a strategist. Brian Barnhart.
Okay.
Who's the strategist for Alexander Rossi this year?
Is that Brian?
The great Barnhart.
Brian Barnhart was always the director. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. It would be 31 years between Indy 500 wins for him.
That's a good one.
How about that one? How about that? All right, Zach, we come back to you. Did you pick your dark horse? Have you made your selection?
I'll go Connor Daly.
All right.
I don't think his car's that great this year, but whatever. I think Graham Rahal was a shot to have a pretty good finish because I think their cars aren't too bad, but I don't know how the pit stuff's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, now
pit stops are a big deal when you do eight of them.
Could Graham borrow the 15 pit crew? Those guys don't have to wear a Honda shirt.
They may get part of them.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little subbing in there.
Unless they say, you know what, Catherine, you're going to get Catherine Legg, you're going to get Graham's pit crew. Otherwise,
that would be the more appropriate thing to do is to give Catherine that pit crew. But
they stuck Catherine in the East Museum lot. She's not even in the driver owner lot. She's in the East Museum lot. Yeah.
Oh, she's over there with Hinch and
Joey. Yeah.
And Joey.
She'll get to it.
All right, Mike. You owe us a dark horse pick.
Ryan Hunter Ray.
All right. That's fair.
I was waiting for Helio.
He says that their cars are good. And he would know.
And you always have a good Dreyer Reinbold car. You always have it. Sage Karam usually puts it in the wall, but they always have a decent car.
Oh, Santino was a top 10 car last year.
Absolutely.
Driving for them.
And the fact that they even had a pit stop car to roll out as this one-off team
normally
is impressive.
If you've got a one-off that has to put together the backup car, it's still in a crate.
Yeah.
Like it is.
They had a rolling chassis that they rolled into their garage to fix, which is impressive. I mean, I was impressed to see. I was like, I walked up.
Is Dakota asleep over there?
No, he's just turning
my mic off.
Okay. I didn't turn it off. I turned it down. Cut out for a second.
I don't hear myself at all.
Oh. He turned me off. There we go.
You're gone.
Now I'm back on. He turned my mic
very
off on my own damn show.
I suppose.
Yes, the host of the show is sensitive to being turned off.
No. I was talking about the control over here. I barely bumped it.
Dakota.
You want my
I want your
and
favorite
dark horse?
And your dark horse.
I want your expert opinion.
I really
Which
think
car's
you,
the prettiest?
I really think you should have started with me.
Did you review the liveries? Have you chosen? Are you going to?
So for my winner, I actually had chosen Scott Dixon. But it's not because of anything that happened last year. It's because I just picked him the most in my fantasy league last year. So I thought, well, I'll go with that one.
Are you doing the Boss Hog fantasy picks this week? Because you're automatically back in. You're still in there.
I haven't done it at all this year.
You can. There are fabulous cash prizes available from IndyCar. If by some miracle you get it right, they will give you like a set of Firestone tires for winning the Indy 500. Like it's there's big money. Yeah.
And then I think my dark horse is going to have to be Lady Catherine.
Catherine Legg.
He went real dark.
You know what? I'll tell you something.
You know how wild that would be?
I'll tell you something that traditionally is going to be an advantage to her. She hit the wall. And a lot of times when you hit the wall before the race, your head's a little bit straighter going into the race.
She made a big inspirational post on Instagram after post crash about how
in the hell did that make your radar?
Research.
You guys keep talking about it and sending things in chat so it'll show up on my Instagram.
How can you sleep tonight not picking any Americans in this race?
Scott Dixon sounds like a pretty American name.
From
There's
Australia.
Not much more American name.
New Zealand.
Than
New Zealand.
He's a Kiwi.
He's a Kiwi.
Catherine Legg of Britain.
Yeah, she's British.
One of the wall chats today, there was somebody that had joked about what's happened to America. It's how horrible it is or whatever. What kind of America is this that these two people crashed in the Indy 500 practice? I'm like, yeah, that was an English woman taking out an English man in the practice wreck.
You can't judge any car drivers by their names.
No.
Santino
Ferrucci.
Connecticut. He's from Connecticut. He looks like
and the screaming Sicilian from last year.
Yeah.
Yes. Screaming Sicilian pizza.
Why don't
All right.
we try pizza instead of chips that taste like clams?
They put something stupid on the pizza before they put. We had a pickle
we
pizza
had pickle
once.
Pizza once. Yeah, we did the dill pickle pizza. Sorry, you weren't here that night, Mike.
That stuff was really.
You
good.
Were off selling $1 million houses instead of coming and slumming it with us.
Giacomo's Pizza has one with pickles on it that's really good.
Bring next time you're here.
We had a pickle pizza king pizza
next time you're here. All right. I'm going to take my favorite. I can't step out on on my guy now. He's had the perfect month of May.
Going for the triple crown.
Alex Palou is going to do what Simon Pagenaud did in 2019 and win everything.
And Will Power in 2018.
Yeah. I'm going Palou. And for my dark horse, I'm going to go Pagenaud. Cause I think he finds his way around Indy, even though the Andretti team and the engineering that they get from Andretti has not been that great. Pagenaud is, he has a knack at Indianapolis. So I'm going to take Pagenaud.
How do we go through six people and not have a Brian Herta in the equation?
Colton Herta?
Grandpa?
Yeah.
Grandpa Herta?
Yeah.
What?
Well, somebody,
what are you talking about?
He's the Colton. Best race engineer on the
strategy.
Who picked Kirkwood?
That's Kirkwood.
Blake
got
Kirkwood for his dark.
Come on. Well, yeah, Blake picked Kirkwood. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's.
I know my stuff over here.
Okay.
Thanks.
By the way, if somebody's looking, Dakota, if you're looking for somebody to actually be a fan of, Kirkwood is an amazing dude.
Yeah.
Zach doesn't like him.
No, I just love the Kirkwood's funny.
We have Mario Andretti back.
Yeah,
in the race
I got
this
pictures
year.
Of Mario Andretti. You know what would have been funnier is that they fixed his name. So the fancy pylon at the track. And on Saturday
was went out for qualifying. Dumpster fire for timing and scoring.
Yeah. And so they put up Marco Andretti's up, but it doesn't say Marco Andretti. It says Mario Andretti.
He's going for another backflip in between one and two.
You know what? He
down there in the seats, Blake promotes.
He would have put it comfortably in the field, probably still. And I thought that they should have changed it to Marco, but then put Mario's face on top of it.
That'd have been nice.
Yeah, just keep trolling Marco, because that's why he still has a ride there. Yeah, that did happen. So yeah, Kirkwood. There's certain names. You just what was Briscoe? What'd they call Briscoe? Kevin Briscoe. That was a fun blow up flub on the TV.
Yeah, the timing and scoring. So. A lot of people were getting very upset at the track on Saturday. Were you out there for both days of qualifying?
No, I just went out Sunday.
So on Saturday, about 85% of the time, once the field filled, right? So once everybody had run through, the scoring pylon, when somebody's trying to bump their way back in, it would never show where things were, like what it would look like it was going to be. It would just
armed
say
Armed Forces
PPG Armed Face Forces Day or whatever out of the track. And everybody's like, okay, people. We know that you've sold sponsorship for this damn day, but this pylon showed us the position people were in for 50 freaking years. And now your fancy pylon that's supposed to tell me what position people are sitting in as we sit on this front stretch, it says, hey, it's Armed Forces Day at the track.
Yeah, but you have three other TVs you could look at and
yes,
see.
Yes, that have a scroll. It's like watching the TV Guide channel in 1997 going, well, I know who's in 17th, but who's in 30th?
And here's a gripe I had that even rolled into Sunday. They had the Fast 12 first, and then they went with the last row shootout. They kept the Fast 12 up there and were then showing the 34. Last rows as being 13th, 14th, and 15th. And so at one point, one of them, like Kanaan, I don't think hadn't even run or something. So Kanaan's car, so it showed Catherine Legg as being, or somebody's car, one of the Rahal Letterman Atlantic cars in 12th, which was not the case. They were in 31st.
Yeah.
But like, it was, and they would never show who was 31st through 34th. And I get that they said,
don't exist.
They'd have those times, but it helps me visually to look and see what those numbers are.
See what they could run.
Because if you saw and you look down there and you're like, dang, it's 15, 45, and 44. You're like, those are the Rahal cars, whatever. You knew those numbers. So, yeah, when you're trying to ramble. Like, it's really hard to remember 34. Like, okay, here's 30 numbers. Where are the four that are missing? And I wish they would have shown that. Yeah, every time you look over there, it's like, oh, it's Armed Forces. It's PBG Armed Forces pulled or qualifications day or whatever. And then it was just this long checkered flag thing because evidently they're having to manually put in the positions on the pylon. But it's a super fancy pylon, but it was just not showing what you want
to
see.
I'm sure it's complicated because they've got all these different screens and it's probably a gigantic pain in the ass and it's entirely custom for them. But yeah, it did not feel good.
So the only way that I knew that there was an issue with the pylon was somebody tweeted about how awful it was. And a Doug Bowles reply
Paul Dalby.
Showed up in my Twitter feed.
Paul Dalby, field of 33.
He said, please show us some grace. We're doing the best we can. Yeah.
I didn't know his problem, but my issue the whole time was like, I would want to see the numbers for 31 through 34 because I want to know who they are.
So here's my concern. It was obviously a massive crowd. You want the at-track experience to be to have as much information as you do when you're watching at home on Peacock or on NBC. And you, unless you were very savvy and knew how to use Twitter or use an app, the IndyCar app, you didn't know what was going on. You didn't know what the speed was they were trying to hit. You maybe knew what they were running, but you didn't know where people were in relation to others, and you didn't know what speed you needed to achieve.
Yeah, I think before even watching the Fast Six at the end, you had to watch the ticker to remember, all right, what's the speed he's trying to get to?
Yeah. And back in the day, they would, you know, it was a very rudimentary yellow and black board that had the speed written on it, and you could see what it was. But now with this fancy stuff, it's like, yep, sorry. No, we're not telling you right now. We're gonna, it's whatever. It's Miller Lite Day at the track.
They did get good Sunday finally on the Jumbotrons in the lower left-hand corner. They would show.
They started like closed captioning.
They would start showing typing it in speed to beat, and they would show whose speed it was and how fast they had to go. And then the commentators are doing a pretty good job of telling you, okay, they're tracking this or tracking that. Dave Clyburn gives way too much of a care about warm-up laps. I don't care about warm-up laps. Scott Dixon would throw monster pole laps down after throwing the slowest warm-up lap of the day, and he would just go off when it came time to go. So they're like, oh, the warm-up lap's this. I was like, I don't want to hear about the warm-up lap, Dave.
Well, and then they got lost. They got lost when Kanaan and Ed Carpenter tied. And they had no idea.
They couldn't figure out why. Yeah,
which one was in the top 12?
Two guys ran exactly the same speed down the thousandth of a second.
Apparently, whoever gets it first, it's the advantage. That's the official policy, at least this year at the racetrack. All right. So this is a Tuesday. We are not doing a show Thursday because 2/3 of the regular staff here will be at the Speedway, but we actually won't be at the Speedway. Zach, we'll be hanging out at the Vogue with Boss Hog of Liberty Friend and the guy that's done every radio appearance all month long.
Yeah.
Joey Molinaro.
So much Joey Molinaro. Just Joey Molinaro and Jay Query in my ear about 2 hours a day for it feels like the last week and a half.
Joey did Bob and Tom this morning.
Yeah, did a good job.
So he's going to be $25 a ticket. You can go see Joey Thursday night at the Vogue in Indianapolis. Joey has said he's got a number of drivers that are soft committed to maybe come out. So if you want a little private meet and greet opportunity to meet some people, meet some drivers, get some FaceTime, go to the Vogue. I think Clayton Anderson is supposed to be out there as well. A little concert from him, Willie Griswold and Benedict Polizzi. I know you watched F-Boy Island.
I do not, but I saw he was on there.
So $25 a ticket. I think I'm bringing a group of 10 so far, at least 10 or 11 people coming out. So
Blake and I will be at the Marriott at the Old Timers Hall of Fame Gala.
All right.
On Thursday night.
Be prepared to repeat yourself a lot, Blake.
It's fourth time going.
I know a couple.
Did they let you sit at the big kids table?
Yeah.
All right. Hey,
yeah. He even has a suit.
Dakota, you got a Thursday night. You can bring a date. You can bring Audrey out and go down to the Vogue. Do you know where the Vogue is in Broad Ripple?
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah. Right next to the old Crackers. Times. The old Crackers Comedy Club.
I love the Crackers.
Never went to the Crackers Comedy Club.
Oh, you're messing up.
I went there one time. I saw Drew Hastings.
It's gone now. Gone forever.
Across the street park. From the...
last show I saw there was Jim Gaffigan.
Hopcat.
Oh, I bet Jim Gaffigan. Yeah.
And then for the first time for Mike since 1996 and Blake's first ever, on Monday night we will be at the Victory Celebration.
Heck yeah. In an official capacity? Yes. Or how no, what's the role?
We have tickets. Yeah. We have tickets.
Very nice.
We have a friend in California named Carlos that hooked us up.
Yeah, I met Carlos down on the pit lane last year, and he has a suite and does two-seater ride and does everything. So he hooked us up with tickets this year.
Very nice. That's
I took him to the Meekum auction, and he's taking me to the Victory dinner. So
that's wonderful. I hope you don't have to put out, Mike. all right,
maybe that's skyline double. Yeah.
Let's move into final.
I think
thoughts.
It's time to end this show.
Blake's driving with the adults in the back. Don't look in the rearview mirror, Blake. Payment's about to be made.
A very big check. Blake, tell me anything we forgot, anything we left out, anything you want to promote, tell me what I need to know. Maybe you want to give a last minute pitch for somebody to come out and buy one of the last 10,000 tickets this thing gets on
TV. Absolutely that. We'll promote the college program. We're accepting people, anybody over the age of 18 going into college. We're accepting for Brickyard. Come out, work Brickyard weekend. It's fun. Good resume booster. And if you guys know any nonprofit groups that want to fundraise, I'll be there for Brickyard as well. So
there we go. And IMSA or not?
You'll be there won't be there won't be any nonprofit groups for IMSA.
Interesting. Interesting. They're going to
IMSA people clean up after themselves.
For $1,500 a campsite, they can pay people whatever the hell they need to pay them for. they won't need volunteers for that. Mr. Plank, it's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
What do we need to know? You got a house you're selling? You got buying a house? You a downtown resident yet?
I think he's homeless.
No, we actually
sleeping in your Gilmore.
So we worked out a deal to actually stay at our house until we got our new house. So that's nice that I don't have to move stuff twice.
It is spectacular.
Yes.
All right. Anything to promote?
Nothing to promote. You know, we've spent the last hour and a half, or whatever, talking about this big event. And you know, a lot of people think I'm not into racing. Give it a chance and go out. And it doesn't matter if you're into racing, if you're a fan of any type of competition, or hell, just people watching. Go out and give it a shot and enjoy the day. It'll be like nothing you've ever experienced in your life.
65 GA ticket will get you a great day.
Yeah. Honestly, if you don't particularly care to actually watch the race, come out mid-morning, enjoy the pomp and circumstance. Go stand somewhere where you can see a video board and see what's going on the main, you know, go stand in the plaza, walk around the plaza area, just enjoy the morning, watch the flyover, all of the stuff that happens, see the start of the race, and then walk home, walk back to your car and just leave and beat the traffic.
No, because the fun stuff happens. It won't be as cool this week since the weather's actually going to be nice, but anytime there's rain during the week, watching the crowd leave the snake pit at the conclusion of the race is fantastic, because you see them all walking in, all the kids dolled up, and they come out just
looking like they've been through
war. In mud. Like, what the hell happened to you over the last 4 hours?
We don't have Steve Aoki throwing cake either.
Are you going to watch DJ Diesel, Shaquille O'Neal at 8:30 in the morning?
I am not. I don't know. I may walk down there, but probably not.
Dakota, anything to note? I've been showing off and selling the hell out of my Dainty Daisy cup.
Oh, have you?
I have. I've been promoting on Snapchat, telling people to check it out. My cup was very popular over the weekend at the Speedway. Most people thought I had it purchased at the track, or that it came with my lap sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
Because
my
move is that I took my Dainty Daisy cup, my new, it basically looks like the Yellow Submarine. One side's the IMS logo. The other side is the Penske truck rental logo, but it says Lap 66 official sponsor. Ball Sog of Liberty stickers on the cup as well, but it's yellow black with the yellow with a black and red pinstriping. And I just filled it with ice, stuck it in the cooler, and then I had a little cup that I used for my bourbon to ginger ale that I got through on Saturday. It worked out spectacularly.
It's a good idea.
And I haven't dropped it yet, Dakota.
Yeah, I did wonder if anyone would think that you, like, oh, wow, they give those cups to the sponsors? That's really cool. But speaking of that, she'll be set up at the farmer's market on Saturday. So come out to Newcastle if you're not at the Indy 500 to the farmer's market.
Now, we did talk about it last week, but are you going to make it out Friday night for the fourth Friday for the big donut hole eating contest?
That's happening.
I won't. I have family coming into town, and I'll be eating a smorgasbord of Indian food, though, so I'll be stuffing my face, but not with donut holes.
Take those chips.
Yes, yeah. Please take the chips.
You guys
check out the Patreon if you want to know what the story is on the chips. We're still trying to get the taste out of our mouth.
There's a cat outside the door, I think.
Mike McCown, you got some businesses to promote. What's going on? What do we need to know?
Well, we need to know that there is no house inventory in Henry County, but the McCown-Tucker team is five strong that's really working hard right now to try to get our buyers and sellers put together, and we're ready for after Memorial Day to hit the ground running.
Well, there is a little bit of inventory. I saw a house went up for sale behind mine today.
I looked yesterday, and there was 11, and normally there's 60.
Three bedroom, two bath, but only 1,000 square feet, running about $150,000 right now. So if you're listening from out in the distance, you want a nice low maintenance brick house, you can find something. Maybe not a hell of a lot of square foot.
We're working on them.
Start building houses. Sell them all the houses you have. You could fix.
Tell me about it.
You could supply fix the supply and no problem, Mike. If you sold 20 or 30 houses.
Yeah, I probably could. But the government would be the only one to profit.
Very good. All right. So if you've got a house to buy or sell, hit up Mike at FC Tucker. Mr. Zach Burcham, we are just hours away from being ready for the absolute stressful slog of towing into lot 6.
Hours away seems like an attorney. I've got a lot of stuff to do. I got most of my mowing done today. It's really weird when you're only home for about 72 hours at a time for 3 weeks.
I've been home for 16 hours.
And yeah. So,
and he was asleep, 12 of them.
I've been running around a lot. So, For people that like Joey, you're like me, I'm a big 500 fan, big Bob and Tom fan. Joey's been all over the place. He got him to do an episode of Bits and Pieces for Bob and Tom. It's him talking Bob and Tom and talking the 500. He did a good job on Bob and Tom today. That's up on the YouTube. So go check out all the things that Joey's doing, and then go get some tickets and show up to the Vogue to see that, because I think that'd be cool. And he's got Billy Griswold for sure is coming, so... Check out that. Otherwise, yeah, Fourth Friday, and they're going to have Joey Chestnut in town eating donut holes, and it's going to see him just, I forget what the number was. We have it on the notes.
382. It was like an insane number.
Insane number.
It wasn't as many as I thought it would be last year.
I mean, but the world record was. And it's staggering. Check that out.
Dry.
The weather looks great. Can you imagine imagine not how you feel the moment you finish. Imagine 20 minutes later. When the sugar starts hitting your bloodstream.
So I've never really watched one of those eating competitions, but it's absolutely disgusting to watch it.
Well, the part that they eat hot dogs by dipping it
in whatever their choice of drink that they have just shoveling it in.
Hey, look, I'd rather eat those than eat this damn chips from Patreon.
Hey, looks like me at Willie and Red's, man.
Yeah. Other than that, it looks nice for the weekend, so everybody has
293 in 8 minutes was the record that was set last year.
Yeah. Otherwise, yeah, go watch those people suffer. And then I bet the people watching will be good there, too. But, yeah, if for the 500, the people watching is spectacular. Even if you don't get in the track, just come out and hang out in Georgetown and watch people, too.
And, of course, Newcastle has the world's largest Memorial Day parade, the largest in the Midwest. Whatever the hook
is the longest
it happens
running?
On Monday.
It might be. I think it's one of the biggest, too.
Well, that's because every Little League team – is in it.
New course this year. Check local listings.
Yeah, straight down Main. Yeah.
It's not the new course. It's the old course again.
We'll see.
Old course for old farts, but it's for my entire adult life. For my entire life, because I marched the course, it's been the one that was. So they might be changing it back, but they took the hills out, which is a good idea.
As a 50-year-old fat man, I'm glad they did.
50?
Thanks.
Yeah, he's undershooting.
Round up there, buddy.
50-ish.
50-ish.
Very good. All right.
Why do we invite him each year?
Listen, man, you started it. You started it, and he'll probably be here long after you now.
Probably true.
The fan response says they like him more. He looks like Jeff Vibbert. My one little announcement is that Sarah and I won an IndyCar Nation lottery again this week. So we get to do we get a very early wake-up call on Saturday morning, but we are stand-ins on Saturday for driver introductions.
Awesome.
So the track does a walkthrough. So I'm going to do my very best to look like Santino Ferrucci or whoever they say that I'm going to be. And I'm going to
You almost have the hair.
I am going to do the driver introductions. We'll see how it shakes out.
Are you introducing?
I'm standing in as a driver.
Yeah.
So there will be 33 fans.
Oh, the walkthrough.
That do the walkthrough.
What are we doing here?
And
okay, that's very cool.
The whole thing. So I get to do wherever the driver is supposed to stand on race day, going through the green room, whatever it is. That's going to be my experience on Saturday.
Cool. So I'm going to do the whole thing. Green room. Got to drive one of the pace cars.
I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to go. I assume we're going to do a little walk across the yard of bricks. The stage will be built. They'll do the big big announcement. You walk out in the row of three and you just practice your wave. If I'm Scott McLaughlin, maybe I have to dab. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. That's the most. The part I'm anticipating the most is what if I'm on the front row? What if I'm
Or what if you're Graham Rahal?
What if I'm Felix Rosenquist? I don't know. I could be Graham.
What if you're Catherine Legg?
Well, I would hope my wife is Catherine Legg in this story. If they're looking for ladies, they choose Catherine. I don't know. We'll see. But it should be fun. So yeah, Indy 500, full of opportunities, full of memories. We'll see what happens. We are back a week from Thursday, Dakota, and correct. It's a show that Audrey PV Davis has programmed. She has us doing another race night once again.
Yes, that's true.
At some point, we'll get back to politics and the things Dakota enjoys. With that, we say thank you guys very much, and we will see you in June.
Be safe, everyone.